Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Peace to the family. I'd like to welcome everyone to the House of the Moorish King. I am your host, D. Miller L., a.k.a. S.U. Miller L. I have my co-host with me.
Brother Free, L. Bay. What's good, people?
Good with you.
Ready to get into it.
Me too. This one's gonna be exciting, man. This one's gonna be real exciting. We have a special guest for you this evening. But prior to having our guest come on, I'd like to make it known. With this particular podcast, we'd like to stick with a central theme, and that's digitization and decentralization. So all of our shows, although they may be varied, coming from various angles, at the end of the day, it will definitely be touching on either digitization or decentralization or both at the same time. Free, did you want to open up the bill with anything?
Yeah, man. I mean, the gaming world right now is, a big cash industry, and moving over crypto into the gaming world only makes sense because most games now are downloading via digital content download. So DLC is what the term is called. So with the advent of the DLC in cryptocurrency, I myself have been able to buy my Xbox Live games and whatnot in Bitcoin. You have to redeem your Bitcoin through Microsoft, but nonetheless, I'm still able to use Bitcoin to buy Xbox games and whatever else, digital content on an Xbox that I can get. So I think it's very interesting in these times that we live in that we can merge this crypto with the whole situation.
Agreed. I think like you said, man, this is definitely going to touch the youth. Those listeners that have, teens, definitely put them on with this information. I think they're going to gain a lot from it. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on our guest and introduce this particular show. Anything you want to say before I do that, Free?
No, bring them on.
All right. So, again, the House of the Moorish King welcomes Anari of Gamerholic. Anari, are you there with us?
Hey, how are you?
Peace, Anari. How are you doing today?
Peace and love, as always. I'm doing quite well. It's a Thursday out in San Francisco, and it's been a very productive day, and it sounds like things are going to get even more productive.
Absolutely. We know that you're the man for that, Anari, so we look forward to this.
Awesome. This is a conversation I've been hoping to have for quite some time.
Yes, sir. I think our audience is definitely going to gravitate towards your message, and more than just the message. If I've learned anything from you, Anari, in the time that we've known each other, you're a brother of action. And I can absolutely appreciate that, and I think all of our listeners are definitely going to value that about you.
Awesome. I really, really think. I appreciate the compliment.
Absolutely. Anari, I'm going to have Free lead this particular dialogue, but I would like to open it up with the question and then even allow you an opportunity to kind of let us know in advance what you'd like to present. My first question, Anari, is I'm very much so aware of your background. We've been, putting out the articles that I found that, had you in there. And a lot of these things are, definitely moving, very compelling. So what I'd like to do first is ask, in terms of computer science and your coding skills, are you formally trained?
Negative.
Okay.
For me, it happened more so out of circumstance. I was pretty much like any other young person in their 20s trying to find a way who didn't go and complete the formal process of schooling. I went from job to job, landed a countrywide home loan, doing mortgages. And we all know what happened to the mortgage market. And after that tank, there had to be, I was watching 60 Minutes or something like that, and I saw Zuckerberg on TV. They're talking about this 23-year-old who was a billionaire. I'm like, all he did was build a website? Oh, okay, okay. I hit up Google, taught myself how to code, and that was that.
Wow. Wow.
Now, it didn't happen that quickly. I don't want to make it sound as though there aren't challenges in that process. It's still a 6 to 9 month dedication thing where I literally just locked myself in a room and just hit up Google, watched a lot of videos, learned PHP, learned JavaScript. So there is a commitment period that's needed.
Yeah, you definitely had to hack your own brain for that whole situation, because I'm a coder too, and I know trying to wrap your head around, you know, functions and operations and, you know, different types of protocols, it's like, oh man.
Yeah, and those errors are going to get to you for a while. If you can get past the errors and, you know, just whatever it is that you take to keep you calm and, you know, productive, do that. If it's you know, a glass of wine on the side while you're coding, do that. If it's something else, but as long as you have something that's going to keep you going after you start getting a bunch of errors, you're fine.
Right.
I'm picking up a little background. If you're not speaking, just mute the line, just so that we can try to make sure this is as clear as possible. If you have it playing in two different mediums, be sure that one of them is muted. That way, it's not an echo.
Okay, right, I think it may just be a
continue.
Connection.
Yeah, please continue. You brothers are definitely going in.
So, did I make it clear? Did I answer the question?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I wanted to follow it up with a little bit, and then I'm going to pass it to Free.
Sure.
Have you ever, Anari, have you ever taken or participated in a boot camp? The reason why I ask is that kind of came up in our Facebook group, the MBA Circle of Peers. A couple of different members in the group, they started to put up different things about these camps, and we've even seen a video where it's comparing university training as opposed to a shortened camp. Have you been to one, and what's your comment on that?
So for me, all this happened back in the 2006 to 2009 that I taught myself how to code. And this was in Silver Spring, Maryland. All right. Now, when I came out to San Francisco, it's a completely, you know, you think you can get things done. But then when you come out here and you see how the real people do it, then you realize you don't know as much as you thought you did. Right. And the advantage that they have over here in that are these 90-day coding boot camps, right? This is the direction that modern universities or an alternate option to university, just 90 days. And, you know, JavaScript, you're getting yourself a $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 job just from learning how to code within a very short period of time. So I'm not mad at them at all for going that route. If there's an opportunity for you to take it, absolutely do it. A lot of these coding schools are also free, meaning that you go through the 90-day process, some are 120 days, you land a job, and they'll collect a percentage of your check as a way to get paid back. But there are free options for you.
Wow. That's outstanding. Outstanding. That definitely should be motivation for our listeners. It doesn't matter, you know, how far away they are. It sounds like Anari. It doesn't matter how far of an understanding they have of coding right now. But within 90 to 120 days, if they're serious, that gap can be bridged, correct?
Easily. I mean, you know, when I first started, I had to go hardcore at PHP. But now coding is so easy. All you need to learn is JavaScript. Just go online, Google JavaScript. You'll get tons of videos on YouTube, tons of links. There's not going to be a problem you come across while learning that somebody else didn't come across, and they provided an answer for it. Right. As long as you just have that natural curiosity. I mean, so here's one thing that I get frustrated about a little bit when we talk about tech and our community, right? You'll always have somebody that comes out the woodworks and says, oh, well, we're the creative people, that's why. Well, you know, creation works in every space. If you can create beats, you can also use that very same creative spirit to write a story. To you may not, you know, paint the best beautiful painting, but you can do something abstract that still shows your level of creativity. Creativity can translate in anything you do that you use your hands for anyway, right? What do you code with? Your hands.
Absolutely.
So as long as you have that natural inclination, even if it's not curiosity, you think yourself as a creator, as creative. If you're creative, you're a creator. So just, you know, do what it takes and just learn how to code. Every single idea that comes to your head all of a sudden, boom, you can just spit it out. It's a beautiful experience.
That is enlightening. Free, the floor is yours. Thank you, Brother Nye.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so I spoke briefly about, you know, Xbox and, you know, their whole platform and how they provide, you know, online service for gaming and how that bridge is happening with cryptocurrency and how you essentially solved that solution. And probably Microsoft and other companies will be looking to follow your platform in the future to set up online gaming, you know, for money. So could you explain more about how Gamerholic works and what was your process
Sure.
in building it?
Sure. Gamerholic is a competition as a service platform. In layman's terms, it just means that you use our platform to play other gamers or to play games competitively and win prizes. Right. My goal was to emphasize real world prizes, not points or badges, but things that you can actually use in the real world. Right. Be it gift cards and so on. Initially, Gamerholic started as a real cash platform. And me and you could play a game of Madden for 10, 20 bucks. You know, you win, the funds are transferred to your account. You withdraw, it goes to your PayPal. But then you'd have scenarios where you and me would play for 200 bucks. All of a sudden you pull your cord out when I'm about to kick the game winning field goal and say it's a thunderstorm. And then when that doesn't work with the site moderators, you'll call your bank and say, hey, I didn't play that game for 200 bucks. So chargebacks became a serious problem. When I moved to San Francisco and I learned about Bitcoin, I was like, oh, you can't charge back Bitcoin? Really? What? and you can do transactions that are pretty much a penny? Okay, that works perfectly fine for gaming. Now, there is going to be a bit of an education hurdle. You do still have to get the masses to understand what this new type of money is. But it just made perfect sense to me that cryptocurrency and gaming go hand in hand.
Excellent, 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 excellent. So how long has Gamerholic been around?
Well, I started Gamerholic years ago, even when I was in Maryland. That's the reason why I moved out to San Francisco. So I've had the platform for at least 5 years. Right.
Okay.
The thing about ideas, and especially I think it's a problem for us, is ideas are just thoughts of what's possible in the future. Right. So you guys remember Black Planet, right?
Yeah.
Indeed.
All right. So Black Planet, the very first social media site. I mean, you look back on it now when it's revolutionary. Everything you were doing on Facebook, you were doing back then. Right. Minus
right.
the fact
Indeed.
That the name
yeah.
didn't translate to a global audience, but it was way
right.
ahead of its time. Right. And so when I transitioned Gamerholic to Bitcoin and gaming at that time, 3 years ago, was way ahead of its time. Even Bitcoin was way ahead of its time. Right. Actually, it's been way longer than 3 years. I mean, this is when Bitcoin first came out there, and it's been 7 years now. So, wow. So now time is finally catching up to the concept of Bitcoin and gaming, and that's the media attention that you've been seeing.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, I mean, when I look at, like, you know, what is possible with these gaming tournaments, and people, you know, have careers now in gaming where they have podcasts, and, you know, they do walkthroughs, and they do all this stuff, you know, and they generate funds. because of the gaming companies pay them to, you know, beta these games and, you know, talk about them and spread them through the podcasts and through their walkthroughs and all of their different, you know, venues that they can express the game in. How has marketing gone for Gamerholic? Like, what platforms are you using to market it?
So, I mean, gaming is definitely its own economy right now. I mean, ESPN is about to start broadcasting esports. Every investor on the planet is moving into esports, including Mark Cuban and a few other big names. We're in a special niche in that we're in cryptocurrency gaming, right? And also, the Gamerholic platform, I don't make video games per se, right? I really just provide the currency, Gamerholic coin, which is a cryptocurrency. I copied the code of Bitcoin and made a coin for gaming. So my interest is in having one coin across all games, across all platforms. Right. So in marketing that, I have to find people who are either already savvy on cryptocurrency, or I have to educate folks on cryptocurrency. So it's been either or so far, right? Now, marketing is not supposed to be the difficult task that it is. There are aspects within our community that makes it a lot more expensive than it's supposed to be. For example, right now, for me to get the number one spot in Bitcoin gaming on Google, each time someone clicks that, it's going to cost me $3. That's pretty expensive.
Agreed.
Right. But you look at most of the American black sites. I prefer to just put American in front because it's, you know, you're American. They don't talk tech, don't have tech sections, don't mention anything about tech. So why am I going over here competing with other people in the world that are paying $3 per click when I should or have at least the option to go to Ebony, Essence, whoever else, and maybe they will charge me 50 cents per click. You know, you know, Essence and Ebony are not on the same scale, so it should be cheaper to advertise there. But since that doesn't exist, it makes it much, much harder for us. You can come up with the best idea in the world, but if you don't have the resources to go advertise and market affordably, that idea is going to be stuck in the rut. And so that is going to affect job creation. It's going to affect wealth. It's going to affect this, that, and the other, simply because we don't have the as many affordable means of marketing as other channels.
Exactly.
Right. And I will say, though, that you have a great advantage in the organizations that you're putting together. You have a good collection of folks within your Facebook group. Folks who the many young people with great ideas need to be able to reach out to your group and say, hey, look, I have this skincare product, or I have this app, I have this game that I'm trying. You have 4,000 people in your group. This is a great marketing resource. How can we work together that could spread my my entrepreneurial vision to your group? If it's something where I got to pay, cool, but at least that avenue is there. Right.
Exactly. That is our intention. Anari, I hate to jump in right here, but I really want to ask a question before you move forward.
Okay.
You made a reference to, we'll say, Gamerholic Coin being across all platforms. And I immediately kind of sparked with that concept. Can you kind of go into that? What would that look like? What kind of what kind of money is in gaming? I don't, you know, like you said, gaming is its own industry. So what would it look like if Gamerholic would, you know, across all platforms, which is, you know, we're talking Xbox, the PlayStation, et cetera. What does that look like?
Xbox, PlayStation, iOS, Android, it doesn't matter what games you're playing. Every gamer is using the exact same means of reward, gaming currency, right? You know, it would look beautiful to me. I want that, right? it would be absolutely amazing, right? But so there's a hidden gem in this opportunity as well, where it just doesn't work out for Inari, or it just doesn't work out for the game team members of Gamerholic. Anybody participating in the Gamerholic coin system can benefit from it. So if you have 1,000 Gamerholic coins right now, and everybody in the group, all the listeners, each have 1,000 Gamerholic coin, and our efforts push the coin on the market to $1, then all of a sudden everybody has $1,000. I didn't make more than you. You didn't make more than the next person. If I have more coins than you, that's just because I have more coins than you. But the coin, my one coin doesn't have more value than your one coin. Right. It would be a beautiful system for everybody to be using Gamerholic coin, all game developers, Xbox, PlayStation, and so on and so forth. But my real, real passion, the reason why I went this route, there's an incredible opportunity here for everybody to win, especially my Sierra Leonean community, and especially my, you know, home of my American Black, American White, American Asian friends as well, who, you know, need a little bit of extra cash, participate.
Absolutely. I can appreciate that. I think that that is I think that that, you know, deserves merit within itself. I think that that's a worthy cause. I think that, you know, your intention is wonderful. But again, could you for us, Inari, and I'm gonna give it back to Free. Could you put a number on the valuation, we'll say, of the gaming industry? I know it would be an estimate. I don't expect you to know the precise value, but what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, all right, so let's look at just a couple of the most popular games, League of Legends being one of the most popular global games, right? It is estimated that they make around $100 million on a daily basis.
Wow.
All right, that's just from folks buying items, virtual items in the video game, right? This is a gaming company that makes $1 billion a month.
Got it.
All right, and we haven't gone to the Hearthstones. That's just one. Oh, we haven't gone to the Hearthstones, StarCraft, Dota, Counter-Strike, COD tournaments. I mean, like Call of Duty tournaments. You have million-dollar winners right now in Call of Duty tournaments. And that's just gamers playing the game. We're not talking about the companies and how much money they make from it.
Right.
Right, the Flappy Bird guy. There was a point of time where Flappy Bird was making $70,000 a day from ads. And these are ads
that
just pay the developer a penny. Yeah. And the developer is just getting paid a penny, two pennies on each time, but it still adds up to $70,000 a day.
That's just unreal, Inari. You know, I think your inspiration, you initially said, you know, hearing about Mark Zuckerberg at his young age, you know, having the value network that he has, you know, that inspired you. And, you know, I think what it is many times we like to imagine what we'd like to be, but we don't really think about what it would take to get there. And what you're describing right now is you have to have a platform, a business that generates that sort of cash daily, that sort of cash, you know, monthly, if you are going to achieve a Mark Zuckerberg status in terms of network.
Well,
so I think that's just powerful.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Now there's some other things that come into play. It's not just Mark Zuckerberg. There's a great team that he has. He had investors come on board quite early and so on and so forth. So there are other pieces in play, right?
Lay it out for us, brother.
Well, one thing that I've observed in the time that I've spent in San Francisco is it's a network city, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're good friends with a homie who just sold his company to Google for $30 million, likely whatever, you know, silly idea you come up with, it may, you know, he's going to slide you $25,000 to grow it. He or she's going to slide you $25,000 to grow it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were just fortunate enough to be in that network, right? Now, from my community, the Sierra Leone community, the American Black community, where we start dropping the ball is we don't participate in the investment side. So you're going to need to raise funds from friends and family. That's just the way it works, right? So if you can have the best idea in the world, you come up to me, I'm an investor, I don't know you from Sam, like most of the investors here don't know the entrepreneurs that are pitching to them. It's just a complete stranger coming up to you asking you for $250,000, right? So there are things that you're going to want to know, like how much did your family invest in you? If the answer is zero, then I'm not going to invest in you. That doesn't make sense, right?
That's right.
How much did your friends invest in you? Oh, the answer is zero? Get out my face. Go get money from your friends and family first. You know, prove that other people trust you first, and then come ask me for money.
You're keeping it. You're keeping it. You know, as you know, you've been around the we've been using the American Black community. So you already know that this is something that, you know, we would call keeping it real. So right now, what you're letting people know is that, hey, if you have an idea, if the people closest to you do not buy in, if they're not interested, if they don't see it, you know, going through, I mean, it's not to say that, you know, they're the end all to be all. However, you should consider that, right, before you get embarrassed in public, right?
Well, that's one way to look at it, but it's helpful to also look at it on the flip side, right?
Yes.
It may not be it's like that parable that says that the prophet is not welcomed at home or something like that, or a prophet is not loved at home. Whatever it is, you're treated better by strangers than folks around you. It's a parable or something
yes.
like that, right?
Yes, yes, sir.
All right, so there's going to be your friends and family have probably heard your ideas since you were 9 years old, or as long as they've known you. It's always one wild idea after the other. At some point, it's not that they don't believe in you. They just think it's just another one of your ideas, right? And so that's an instance that some people just come across. It's not that your friends and family don't believe in you. It's just that, oh, it's just another one of your ideas, right? And they may not know the process of, okay, we actually have to play a part in order to make an idea successful. Your ideas didn't fail. It's just that we didn't play a part in making it successful, right? There are a lot of instances where, you know, it's not the entrepreneur's fault, and I don't think their friends and family understand that this is just part of the process. You're going to have $500 I invested last time didn't work out. At least you followed through. You built the product. I saw you out there working your ass off. It didn't work out. Cool. I'll loan you another $500 for you to try something else. Okay, that didn't work out. As long as you see the effort being made and the results being produced, invest again. This is how this city works. And this is why so many people come here and be successful, because they have cultural interwinings that work for that. Like the folks from India, I mean, my goodness, I've never seen a people work better together than folks from India, right? They fight to get H-1B visas to get other Indian developers over here. Right now, 60% of the H-1B visas go to Indian developers. Why is that? Because the Indian entrepreneurs who are here, they fought for that, right? And then when one does come here, there was a time I was at a hackathon. I was working with a gentleman named Puren. He's from India, and he had a buddy of his who wasn't a skilled coder. And regardless how busy Puran was, if his buddy had a question, he would take 5 minutes and explain it. And that experience at that hackathon actually changed how I, in turn, work with people. I want to make sure that regardless, I'm not going to, come on, man, I'm busy right now. No. Okay, you need to learn something. Cool. Let me take 5 minutes and teach it to you.
That's right. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I feel like once you are getting people involved in coding too, I think it'll expand their horizons as well. Like that family member that you're talking about, like if you open up a website for them, or if you do something worthwhile that they can see the benefit of, or if you get them like a cryptocurrency wallet and just put some money in it for them and, you know, show them what they can do. See, that might make them more willing to invest in what you're doing as well, when they can see how what you're doing operates. Because, you know, just want transparency. You know what I mean?
Very true.
At the end of the day, they just want transparency. Go ahead.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, my next question is I heard you have a few different app projects going on. In the app developing world, we know, like we were talking about the gaming world, but just the app developing world is also commanding billions of dollars a day. And people, you know, like I said, getting downloadable content, items and everything via that. So what kind of, you know, developing situations are you got, do you have with your apps? You know, I heard that you have an app that's going to help people get food, I think it is. Could you explain more?
All right. So that app that you're referring to is Owo. Owo means money in Yoruba.
Okay.
So the intent here was to find a way to get young people in Sierra Leone income, right? And the thought for that was rather than me sending money directly to my grandmother or family member, I would ask a young person to buy some rice, fruits, vegetables at a marketplace and then deliver it to my grandmother, right? So that way you actually have job creation, right? Any immigrant from anywhere, it doesn't matter if it's Latino, Indian, whatever, they're going to tell you family members who hit you up all the time asking for money. It becomes a much better thing where you can kill two birds with one stone, create jobs, and still get them the products that, that they're asking for.
Right.
Now, on the app development side, I think it's a little bit redundant to say that tech, go tech is it. I'd like to create a sense of urgency with your listeners and let them know that within the next 5 years, if you don't know how to code, good luck to you. Right? I don't know if you've been watching, videos about the robots that are coming to take your job, but even, you know, the smartest of the smartest people are saying anybody making under $20 an hour, your job will get replaced by a robot. That's not five years away, but you're going to start seeing it happen within the next 5 years.
Anari,
right.
Can you repeat that one more time just so that there isn't any confusion?
Anybody making less than $20 an hour is going to be replaced by a robot. It's not going to happen within the next 5 years, but if you're, let's say, under 40, it's going to happen within your lifetime.
Exactly.
I put up a post yesterday
of Boston Dynamics robot. You know what I mean? And so, forget about it. And the AIs, forget about it. Like, they code way faster than we can.
Bro, it doesn't even matter if you're a lawyer that writes contracts. Your job is gone. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Boston Dynamics, those MIT boys don't play. I mean, they build some crazy things. Those robots are going to get guns in your job. So, either which way, you're gone. Right. And to iterate the second part, it's if you don't know how to code within the next 5 years, good luck to you, especially women. And I don't know if women are into the secret that women run the internet. Right.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't matter if it's Facebook. Who runs Facebook? A good age group of grandmas and moms who are posting pictures about everything.
Oh wow!
Right. Right. Pinterest.
I'd like to add to that very quickly. Just real quick. I definitely have come across some data that definitely affirms what Anari is saying right now, just with regards to the internet in general. They say, you know, more than 50% of the time, it's being used to reach out and touch someone, something that would be much more associated with a feminine activity as opposed to, we'll say, a masculine activity. And again, it's to reach out and touch, communicate, and these sorts of things as opposed to any other kind of behavior. And we could even associate that with gaming. I think obviously a large group of it, you know, the whole competition and domination, that's much more of a masculine activity.
Yeah, but social games, women run social games. Women made Zynga a $1 billion company.
Absolutely.
Right? And I don't know if women are into that secret, because most of the time when I come across women entrepreneurs here, even in San Francisco, they tend to be taking wanting to compete against men in their product as compared to, look at the variety of categories that women have compared to men. There's women's health, childcare, marriage, this, that, and so on and so forth, pregnancy, and there are apps and services that are needed for every single one of these categories that are quite competitive, makeup, fashion, this, that, and the other, right? But you come here, you take a look at most of these sites that you would think are, they're women-catered products, but they're ran by men because women are not participating in that space for whatever reason.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So strongly, strongly learn how to code. And it, now, the sense of urgency comes in this, right? The longer you wait, the more information you're going to need to catch up with, right? So even now, by the time your audience gets a hold of Bitcoin, well, within 2 months, you're going to need to learn Ethereum because Ethereum is pretty much what's going to, like, change the game. And that's a completely different blockchain.
Yes, sir. Yes,
so
sir. We are.
The longer you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I only wanted to add that, Free and I, the Moabit Association, we definitely advise, those that were with us when Ethereum was raising funds, when they were offering Ethers as a crowdfund. We definitely participated in that. But please continue.
Nice.
Please continue.
Yes. But the real sense of urgency is just we're going to have to move faster, much, much, much faster. Don't say, yes, I'm going to finally learn how to code because I listened to this podcast, and then 2 weeks later down the road, you're still putting it off. No, you get on that, you start searching JavaScript on Google tonight. Right, there's a sense of urgency in just moving 10 times faster than we move now. We make decisions way too slow. We learn too slow. We adapt too slow. And right now, it seems like we are always reacting. Right. The side effect of that ends up being in marketing for me, because our audience is bombarded with so much information. Right. That I have to fight to get my voice in that information. Right. So if you're not even interested or curious, you're not up to date on the latest information, then it makes it more expensive for me and other entrepreneurs because now I have to educate and market to you.
Right.
Simply because that natural curious conversation isn't even there amongst your circle of friends. If you haven't heard about Bitcoin, I can't believe I'm still running into people who haven't heard about Bitcoin. Like, where have you been? Who are your friends? Who do you talk to?
And they watch daytime television, man. That's,
yeah, all right.
That's
but it's
boils,
very, very
that's what
important.
It boils down to, because the media knows how to keep Bitcoin under suppression. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, there's a large world of us coders and us financial people who understand it, but the world at large who uses the Android phone but doesn't know what runs the operating system. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
I got you.
Really the problem, you know what I mean? Like I said, the education of people and their technology, they just rather just grunt through it, and everything like that. I still have people asking me, can you help me update my Microsoft? I'm like, my Windows and stuff like that. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know how to go in the control panel? So yeah, man. I think what you're doing is awesome, and in its sense, it is revolutionary because it's offering a platform for all of those people that belong to the House of the Moorish King, which is the Moors, the African Americans, the Sierra Leoneans, the Algerians, the Nigerians, everybody. You know what I mean? We're all under this umbrella, and we all have to work together to really pull our resources and get the funding to make sure that our decentralized currencies flourish and our decentralized governments flourish. You know what I mean? And your platform is definitely, pioneering the way to show that we can do that. You know what I mean? So kudos to you.
Thank you very much. You yourself, we have been in communication for quite some time. I do see the posts I give you mad compliments for being the one Moorish group or association that's actually informing and educating your community.
Right. I've tried to approach several other groups. Information is good. There's nothing wrong with information. It's the same information that goes out daily. We know what our history is by now, but let's start talking about the future a little bit.
Right. And that's what we try to cut through. You know what I mean? We're like, look, everyone, they go study your religion and everything on your own. We want, after you're done with that and you're proficient in your religion and everything, now get on this coding, because the only way you're going to make it in this world is through that. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Exactly.
Your religious beliefs aren't going to get you much of anywhere in this world today. It's the world's so secular now, your religion is not a factor in the large equation. You know what I mean? So
that's definitely
the way it
is. And part of that as well, I strongly encourage the young people in your homes. If you have anyone, you know, 5-year-olds can code. They have kids' toys that teach the kids how to code. 10-year-olds can code. 15-year-olds can code. Right? You're putting your family in a much better position when you get every single young person in your home coding. They're having better conversations, smarter conversations. And heck, by the time they're 10 years old, they could build an app that's actually bringing income into the home.
Bam.
Right?
Perfect. Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly.
There's no waiting for them to get an NFL contract, exactly, an NBA contract, or whatever it is that you're hoping for. Right?
You know,
even if it's a thing where you buy a minor and you leave, you know, the young ones in the home in charge of the minor. We're moving into a period where you can automate your income. You know, you just buy a miner, plug it in, mine some Gamerholic coin, and you're making $70 a day, $100 a day, maybe $20 a day, whatever the case is. But the more miners you add, the more money you make, and you get to the process of automating your income. Right? There's so many brilliant conversations going on in the Bitcoin world. There's the basic income conversation, where they want to give everybody a basic income, because they know that the job market is about to crash. Like, there are going to be many people out of work. The government has no choice but to say, hey, look, we'll just give everybody $1,000 a month.
Exactly, exactly. The brother D. Miller, right, he's got the 21 Bitcoin computer. I want him to speak on that real quick to just let us know, you know, verbally, what are the implications of this machine that you've brought into your home and how it can automate your income.
You know what? I'll just touch on it for a second, but I have to say one thing, like automation, right? Automation. Yes, I just received my 21 Bitcoin computer. You know, long story short, consider the computer that you have right now. Consider the device that you're using that connects to the internet right now. The same way that we're talking about coding and being able to, you know, get involved in app development, developing platforms, right? Different, you know, utilizing the software as you know, in different ways. You're going to be able to do this with the Bitcoin computer, except the difference is that, you know, it's immediately decentralized. So the app, throughout its development and once it's finally ready for, you know, consumption, it will be decentralized. So this is just a powerful concept. We'll be able to get into that a little further, I think, in future episodes. However,
no doubt. I just wanted,
what I'd like to do is first say that, you know, we spoke on our very first show about the way in which technology is going to enter society and automate certain aspects of society, and this is going to bring back what we call work, and I'm talking about the amount of time that's applied in menial labor, right? So we already said, you know, with technology, we're looking at something that's going to allow us to have more time with ourselves, with our families, you know, being involved in the things that we're passionate about, right? But what I really want to do right now, we were talking about something else. Brother Inari, I seen a couple pictures on your Facebook page, and I was wondering if that had anything to do with the third platform that you have. You were actually addressing. Yes, sir. You were very, very sharp.
Thank you, sir.
Very sharp.
Thank you. All right, so I really, really like the Africana platform, right? Almost everything that I try to build has some kind of economy in it. It's not just about me, right? So the Africana platform is a Africana via monthly subscription. Everybody loves Africana clothes, but they don't know where to get it, right? So we use the Netflix model where we say just sit back once a month, twice a month, you'll get two tops, two skirts, how many ever it is that you want to try. You buy the ones you want, you return the ones you don't. Or you can sell the ones you got to another Africanomy member and make a profit. Right.
Right. Basically, a decentralized thrift store of sorts, you know what I mean?
Well, right now it is still centralized because there's a database and so on and so forth. I'm starting to tinker quite a bit with Ethereum. There's some really, really cool things that we'll do in the future with that. But for right now, it's not decentralized.
Right. But, I mean, the model and the idea is there and ready for that. You get what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Right. In building it this way, I mean, I have family members and so on and so forth in Sierra Leone. I need them to send clothes. I have friends in Nigeria. They have family members that are always hitting them up for money. Now they can start sending clothes and earning an income for themselves. If somebody in your group wants to become an importer-exporter, now you have the opportunity. You have a marketplace where you can sell beautiful fashions, art, furniture, whatever it is that you want to go back home and buy.
Man, that sounds great. That sounds awesome.
All right, well, but if you gentlemen would like to try the Africanomy platform, I'll give you some codes, 100% free. Just try it out, and I'll give us some feedback on what you think, how you think the process is.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I also encourage the audience to also get on the Gamerholic and do the free practice games, correct?
Yes, please. The Rabbit Games are free to play. You can win free Bitcoin. There's an awesome arcade. Young people play video games. Every kid in your home or young person in your home or you yourself, you play in some app or something.
Candy Crush or whatever it is.
Or whatever it is. You're making all these other companies, you know, billions of dollars. Why isn't there a black-owned billion-dollar gaming company? That doesn't make sense to me. I keep scratching my head on that all the time. Right? That is an enormous source of economy. Right. One Tesla I like to say is if you stop 100 black folk on the street and you ask them to point to one app on their phone created by a black developer, you will likely get zero.
This is right. True.
If you just pay attention to the free games you download, you would shift millions of dollars in ad revenue to Detroit, Oakland, Chicago, wherever it is that you have developers, and all we have to do is just play free games.
Right, something that people do already, and they usually pay to play them. So,
exactly, you know. And that's just come from paying attention to whose games you downloaded.
Right. Well, you got anything else, brother?
I do.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask it in this fashion because I'd like to give you an opportunity to lay it out. I do have a final question as well. Actually, two questions. But the first thing is how do they all play together? And you know, I think that our listening audience, you know, we're talking at a certain level where, you know, we're not necessarily just talking to consumers. So there may be people that are out here that are listening that would like to know how they can actually maybe even have ownership or stake in what it is that you're doing. Can you kind of describe if, you know, maybe through Gamerholic, Africana, you know, .me, or how do you pronounce it, Owa?
Owa.
Yes. How can we participate in these things? You know, maybe we're older in age, you know. We'll instruct our children, you know, in the direction that they need to go, but maybe we're done with climbing that chain. So how can we participate, though, you know, for that passive income maybe, or, you know, that kind of thing? Is that an option?
All right. So right now I'm enforcing the friends and family objective with my own community, Sierra Leoneans. Right. I have a goal of 100 Sierra Leoneans who each invest $500 in my company. Right. Within the next X amount of time, we should raise $250,000. And I would like Sierra Leoneans to be part of the early bunch of investors because we need to create a lot of wealth, meaning we need to create 10 plus more millionaires in the next 5 years if we want to make some of the investments that we need to make in Sierra Leone. Right. I'm just going to go back for a second. Part of the what you said with the Mark Zuckerberg scenario, in that I was inspired by that. It's not necessarily there are two phases of inspiration. Right. You actually get inspired to have the idea, and then you actually get, you know, you do the work. There's inspiration that comes from doing the work. Once you start seeing the you know, if you're building a sculpture, you know, as the sculpture is built, you get more satisfaction from seeing your hard work. So there's a part where it's not just being inspired. You actually also have to do what it is that you say that you're doing, right? I might have sidetracked a little bit, but I kind of even forgot my original point. But right now, the stage is friends and family enforcing that within Sierra Leoneans, 100 Sierra Leoneans investing $500 in my company. Once that is done, then I will go to I'll move on to the process of actually bringing on board classic Silicon Valley investors, right? Just for my own sake, I think it's very important to have that friends and family part in place. Now, as far as other folks participating in my ventures, look, if you're a gamer, like a hardcore gamer, and you'd like to participate in Gameaholic, you know what, we could use some social media help, someone who's posting on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the latest news updates, videos, cool content, and also cryptocurrency information, right? If you're a fashionista or a fashionista for the guys, the Africana.me platform, it'll be awesome to have stylists on board who actually arrange what's supposed to be sent out, right? Well, we're going to move that down to the side because there are some legal issues. If I'm sending money, Bitcoin, outside of the country, know your customer, KYC, implies that we have a government ID from them. And most of the young people in a lot of West African countries don't have any kind of government ID whatsoever. So we need to move that to the side for a second and clear up some legal issues. Well, right now, the focus is Gameaholic, and Africana.me gets about 25% of our efforts right now. Was that
absolutely
a little bit too Rambo? Did I answer the question?
No.
I know I went on for a little bit.
No, you did. No, you did. Like I said, I think that is for the older audience, because I think that our message is going to span, you know, age and generation. Now, this is actually for the younger people. This question: how long did it take Inari to create? And I know it's an ongoing process, but I'd like for you to kind of put hours to how long did it take for you to create the Gameaholic platform? How many hours have you contributed to that? And how long did it take to create the Gameaholic coin that is actually fueling that platform? Because I'd like for our audience to know you have a platform and then you have a cryptocurrency that is fueling the platform, or at least creating a circular kind of motion, which is an economy.
Yep. So it took about, for the very first version of Gameaholic, it took me maybe about 3 to 4 months to build because I was still in the learning process. Right. Gameaholic coin itself, I contracted that out for somebody to build for me. I mean, that's outside of my skill set. Right. Now, though, the product is built, it's up and running. There's a difference in building the product and building the entrepreneur. Right.
Yeah.
When you come to San Francisco, you realize that the entrepreneur, or a lot of the more successful entrepreneurs, are the most humble people They don't dress flashy. They're not driving Benzes. It's nothing like what you would imagine wealth to be, right? A billionaire would walk past you in the street and you would think he's a bum, right? In creating the Anari, the entrepreneur, I had to go through a humbling process because I came from the high culture world of mortgages. I mean, we're yelling on the phone. We're going out and, you know, doing Louis the 13th shots for lunch. And it was just not a healthy environment as compared to how entrepreneurs actually operate in San Francisco. Right. And so what ends up happening then is where this culture thing comes in. You hear the word culture a lot in the startup world. So you have a lot of young people come from New York, Chicago, whatever, to come chase the San Francisco dream. And they realize that hood confidence, that, you know, that hip hop, I don't even want to say arrogance, but that swag, that confidence just doesn't fit into this culture. Right. And you have to, like, almost reverse it and go through this re-humbling of yourself and actually reaching out and helping people. Hey, what can I do for you? Oh, you need this built? Yeah, I know somebody who can code that for you. Oh, you need a graphic design? I can do that for you. There's so much of doing for other people when you get out here that, you know, nobody tells you that part of the entrepreneurial hustle when you're not in San Francisco. So I really don't want it to make it seem like, hey, I created a gaming company. The last article said we could be the first billion-dollar gaming company and so on. I see the way people look at me now that they've read those type of articles, and they don't understand. I'm not, you know, no one ever explained that there's an entrepreneurial growth making as well. Does that make sense?
Indeed. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think, in fact, you know, what you were describing as a humbling. I have to definitely interject. There were some statements made earlier that I wasn't necessarily in disagreement with, but I think that there's a place in terms of humility. And what I'm thinking of right now is just in terms of how we relate to one another. As you described, Anari, you said, you know, if you're really trying to build a team, if you're really trying to build something, if you're really trying to do the right thing, you're going to help that person that is asking that very even basic question, right? As you said, you know, maybe I'm too busy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't believe you're asking me that. Like, you know, read a book, right? Or where did you learn? Did you get your, you know, education out of a cracker box? So, you know, I totally understand that. And to go even further, this is why I even, you know, take the position that a person should, for them to be successful, especially in the future. It's all about collaboration. They got to learn how to work with people. You have to learn how to not be an asshole or at least to piss people off, right? Affinity is very important.
Very true.
With regards to working with people, right? Because people are going to be sensitive. You know, you might not even mean what it is that they're taking it to be. Or maybe you're just the type of person that is very, you know, direct. Like, you see what's coming in front of you, and you tell the person that you're dealing with, listen here, you need to get out of the way if you have good sense. And, you know, it's not really a time to be emotional, right? Why are you talking to me this way? kind of thing, right?
Very true. Yeah.
That, you know, it's a time and a place for everything. And all I'm really saying at this point is that some degree of teaching that will allow one not only to understand unity, you described how the Indian population there in California, the way in which they work together, right? Or at least their culture, just their natural behavior. This is in general. This is not, you know, talking about an individual person. This is just in general, generally speaking. I think that that's valuable because, as you said, the young people hear about the cultures that exist in corporations, and what I've come to understand is that, you know, there's an old culture that exists in corporate America where, you know, not only the consumer but the employee is essentially a number. But what you have in the birth, especially there while you're there in California, I kind of would like you to speak on this, but the way in which they're developing companies with culture is unprecedented in the corporate structure. As I said, initially you're just a number. The consumer is a number, the employee is a number, but now they tend to try to engage the consumer and engage the employee in a different fashion. They're trying to even reach the heart of the employee or the heart of the consumer.
Yes. I mean, it is a science out here, man. I mean, when you hear of these, some of these companies that all of a sudden they have a million users and so on, a lot of science was applied in achieving that, right? They have metrics and data for every personality type, every scenario. There's a lot of A-B testing. It's test. Like, a lot of these companies aren't like, you know, they didn't just open shop and they were successful. No, they tested a lot, failed 100 tests, and finally came across a test that worked. And in 3 years again, they probably have to start that whole cycle over. But you're absolutely right in that, quote unquote, again, the culture word. The culture word is, it's internal. It's not, it has nothing to do with swag. It has nothing to do with attitude. It's all about how you work well with everybody in that office. And I don't think that message gets out to our young people at all, because when they come out here or when they apply for Gamerholic, and this isn't to put down New York or to talk bad about New York at all. New York has the best hustlers I've ever came across, right? A couple of times. Yeah. I mean, like, it was just us out there selling Gamerholic T-shirts. Dude, come on. Yo, I want to work for you, man. What's up? Right? But that culture doesn't work in the tech space, because that personality you can't say no to quite often, right? They come to you with their most excited idea. Yo, I think we should do this. And I'm not talking like this to make fun of anybody. I think we should do this. I mean, I really, really like it. I promise you we'll get like 200 gamers out there right now if we go do this, man. It's not with our path right now. That's not what we're doing. We can try it in 90 days. We can test it. I'll test anything. But let's do what we're doing first now, and in 90 days we'll try it. Oh, man. All of a sudden, you have to be able to take no and not, you know, blow up the whole office. Right? And that happens quite a bit with young people who don't understand there's a work culture difference.
Got it. Okay, my final question with this, we'll wrap it with this one, give some closing comments after the fact. But my last question, question. Brother Nari, have you been involved in any hackathons? And if so, have you placed ever? And what were the things in which you were creating during the hackathon? Give us a rundown of the hackathon if you were involved in any.
I love hackathons, man.
You know what? That's why I brought it up. I think that's like one of the coolest things. Like, in fact, I've never participated. But, you know, I guess I'm the nerdy type or what have you. I always felt like, yo, that would be the dopest thing to, you know, because I've done overnighters in, like, community centers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm about to nerd out right now. Like, people probably be like, yo, this dude weak. I've done overnighters, you know what I'm saying? Like, at the community center where we was balling, you know. We would play basketball through the night, you know what I'm saying? Lower the goal so we could dunk, and we would have a good time. But I can only imagine, you know, bringing that amount of passion to, like, coding, you know. So, yeah. Go on ahead and let me know.
Hackathons are, I can't say enough about them, right? They really, really saved me in this city because on weekends you had something to do. They'll feed you for free. You'll win prizes. You'll win cash, win Xboxes, win gift cards, whatever the case, right? So what's a hackathon? A hackathon is a weekend where a bunch of nerds just get together and hack out a product. Now, the process is usually a little bit the process varies. It could be a company like Microsoft that says, hey, look, we're releasing some new things for Xbox. We want to see what developers can build with our API, right? So developers will get together, and the best person that builds something using the Microsoft API will win $2,000 a prize or whatever the prizes are, right? Now, here's where there's a hidden opportunity in hackathons that a lot of people don't take advantage of. If you don't know how to code, go to a hackathon, right? You get on stage and you say, hey, look, I don't know how to code, but I have this awesome idea. I want to build this, that, and the other. I already have the network for it. I have a bunch of friends on Facebook who will help me share the idea. I really think it's going to be big. And if developers that are there like your idea, they'll build it for you that weekend, even if you don't know how to code. At least you'll be walking out of there with a minimum viable product, a website that looks good, it's up and running, and your idea is done. Right. The hackathons that I participated in, the Emirates Hackathon. I won that one by building a service that allowed them to use airline miles as virtual currency in video games. Right. With HP, a lot of the hackathons that I did were around gaming. With HP, it was using gamification to identify assholes within your organization so the right person gets rewarded. And with Mercedes-Benz, I built a way for you to pay for gas, parking, and so on and so forth using Bitcoin while still in your car. Right. So all of these were great opportunities because it validates me as a guy who can come up with cool ideas that big brands like. And it also helps put some money in your pocket.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's awesome. Free, I wanted to bounce it off of you real fast, man. Like I said, we're going to close out, but if you have any other questions, comments, definitely you have the floor.
No, I don't got too much to add, man. That's perfect, man. Like you said, if you have the ability, go check out a hackathon. You know what I mean? If you don't know how to code, learn how to code. If you have a great idea, make sure you get in the room with the right people and have the right attitude about it. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, 2016. If you don't have a nerd in your circle in 2016, you're wrong decade hustling.
The movie Dope showed that. The movie Dope showed that.
Like three of you and none of you can code, really? What are y'all doing?
No, it's a fact. You know, it's a fact. We're laughing. You know what I mean? That's almost that. You know, you might have spent a little too much time in New York. You know, you're laughing at those that know not, when in fact, you know.
Yeah.
But in fact, you know, we should again. I think it's our place. I think that we have the charisma. We have. We are those people. We are those ones. In fact, you know, Inari, I see that you kind of shy away from it. You know, being a man of his word and wanting to produce as opposed to, you know, wasting time in philosophy or, you know, just the feel-good thing. Like, it's like, hey, like, we need to get something done. Like, let's accomplish something. And honestly, that's to be honored as well. It's just we have to find that balance, you know? We have to genuinely find that balance. Because I think that's what these corporations have figured out in terms of, why have they chosen to take this position, you know, as opposed to the previous position? I'm going to treat my consumer, I'm going to treat my employee as a number, as opposed to I'm going to treat my consumer as if they're family. I'm going to treat the employee as if they're family.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's something to be observed because I first and foremost, I think that that's an ancient concept. As you said, there's a lot of science being applied. But, you know, at this point, Inari, I want to give you the floor. If there's anything, contact information that you'd like to leave, I also want to say this. This show has been flames, right? This is on fire, right? This is probably going to be the most impactful show that we've done to date. And I have to say that, like, meaning the next show, it has to be potent for it to just keep up with this one. Does that make sense? Is that clear?
Rachel.
You're definitely bringing, you know, a lot of potent information, a lot of motivation right now, a lot of inspiration. It's very compelling. But I would like for you to know that, first and foremost, we're committed to, you know, seeing what you're doing succeed. And however we can help with that, we're going to do it. We're definitely going to do it. So contact information. Anything you'd like to leave as a final comment, and then we'll close out.
All right. Thank you very, very much for your time. I extend my arms in just the same generosity. Any help at all, anything that you guys need, please reach out. It's not a guarantee I'll be able to deliver on everything you ask, but I will exhaust my efforts to make sure that at least there's one group out there that's educating information, that's educating their community about the future, right? But my parting words are just, look, move faster. We need to move faster. You can't wait to, you know, for this subconscious white permission to kick in before you do something, right? And by that, I mean seeing something on mainstream media first before you start participating in it or make a decision and so on and so forth. All the information in the world since the beginning of time is now available to you right there on your phone. You can make decisions so much faster and good decisions. That's really, really it. Contact information, I'm at anari@gamerholic.com. Anybody can reach out, add me on Facebook, questions asked. But please, we need to move faster and definitely learn how to code.
This is your host, D. Miller L. I want to say peace to the family.
Peace. Signing out, y'all.
Thanks again for your time.